It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Del Carme and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Liam Del Carme. We've got a packed show this week because we've got to get through the UFC that returns, a couple of big derby matches, and we are unpacking some of the Six Nations results. Not just the results, but there are a couple of distinct talking points. And with me to do all of this is co-presenter, co-host, Brendan Now. Welcome, Brendan.
Thanks, Liam. That's co-host. It sounds like so formal. Co-wine drinker, I think, is more likely.
Well, yeah. Somebody to cheers with on a regular basis.
Or as they say, Weinflich or whatever, something like that. Those who know will know. Yeah. Hulle weet wat ons weet, type thing.
Yeah. We've got the URC back, and we've got some derby matches back this week. And I take it you are pleased that it's back and that this weird break is something of the past.
Yes and no. It's nice to actually have something to concentrate on again. Although the season's so disjointed at the moment, I'd rather have us have a proper season like we used to have where, you know, after the sevens in December, we switch off for a couple of weeks. But now it's sort of in between other competitions. You have these strange weeks where we come back for just 1 week of URC, and next week it's back at Six Nations. And, and then after that, another big derby again. So a big weekend for derbies, especially South African teams, and rather important for all four South African franchises at the moment for different reasons. And I think we'll go through that. But let's start with the Six Nations. I mean, that has been sort of capturing, keep on hearing on the commentary how it's the best tournament in the world and how everybody is doing so well in Ireland are saving world rugby. I'm so glad for them because who knows where the game would be if we just let them throw the ball around. Anyway,
I'm glad you got that off your chest.
I tend to listen and just chuckle when these things the whole time. But anyway, I suppose the big question is, can anybody stop Ireland? They've been rather clinical. They were very clinical against Italy, keeping them to 0 points. So that's pretty good. And the Italians were rather disappointing, especially after the game against England. But I suppose that almost to script for Italy. Then we had the Scotland-France game, which gave us all sorts of controversy for the wrong reasons. We had TMOs rocking and rolling images and still not finding out.
Went on forever.
Yeah, and still not finding the same conclusion that we all saw. Gifting, it's not really gifting, but giving France the win.
Although we saw it and we also didn't see it because it wasn't conclusive. A try was probably scored. However, you couldn't conclusively say that it was because that essentially was what the TMO was asked to rule on, because on field, a decision had been made, and unless there was a body of evidence to suggest otherwise, then, you know, that decision would stand. And, you know, so the protocol was properly observed, but was it the right call in the end? Well, we can debate that.
I tend to go back to, and that's where it's one of those frustrating things where rugby doesn't do itself any favors. We tend to overcomplicate the process, and the TMO is one of those ones that continually comes up. We'll probably be speaking about TMO calls at least 10 more times this year. And what gets me is that it should be a very simple question. There shouldn't be any. I know they want to keep the whole thing with the ref and all the responsibility with the ref on the field, but it should be a simple question to the TMO: try or no try. Yeah, and that's where I think the whole thing goes wrong. Because as soon as you say conclusive evidence,
that certainly would have served the scenario last Saturday best.
Yes,
but of course these things change; these pictures change from match to match. Sometime in the same game, you get different situations. So I suppose there is a case to be made for taking it away from the ref in that moment. But then, you know, ultimately 2 weeks down the line, we'll probably have the counter argument. We say, no, the ref has been stripped of his powers.
True, although I think if the ref feels that he can't make that decision and he says try, no try, and goes up the TMO, that should also, if there's no conclusive evidence then the TMO has that right to say that again. But By calling it's almost like the cricket umpires thing. We've seen cricket often the umpires call on the replays, and it's not always the decision that you think it would be. And sometimes it's in that grey area, and it goes to the batting side often then. But I don't know. I just think there should be a better situation. Rugby tends to have controversy where there should be no controversy. And I don't know. I don't know how we're going to solve this, but I just think trying to try is a lot simpler for everybody.
I think even if the decision went the other way, there would still have been controversy. So,
of course, every rugby fan who's either French or doesn't like Scotland is going to tell you how Scotland had that game in the bag like they did against Wales and then threw it away and had enough time to win that game.
I think what we can say from that game is that nobody conclusively deserved to win the game.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's that sort of thing. Those type of arguments never get to me because, at the end of the day, rugby games ebb and flow. Team like the previous week against Wales, Scotland got off to 26-0. Wales found their feet and came back into the game. That's what makes rugby so great. So to say team should have closed it out or should have done this, those things, you play as well as your opposition, that you play a lot of the time, and it just becomes a bit of a, sort of a false equivalent.
Absolutely. Speaking of Wales.
I was going to get on to that. Saying that, you talked about no side deserved to win. At least it was entertaining. I think the Irish game, as cynical as they were was rather boring to watch. I'm not going to lie. Mm. And now I'm sounding like an English columnist in the newspaper. But the English-Wales game was a horror show. And I know England will be patting themselves on the back by winning that game, but the standard was terrible, and it just wasn't a great game to watch.
Yeah, I found it a hard watch as well. It certainly is not. If you're going to make the big statement, as they so often did in the opening week, that it's the best competition in the world, I mean, on the evidence of what we saw last weekend, that's not the case. Even the France-Scotland game, they didn't shoot the lights out. As a spectacle, the Ireland, Ireland was fantastic, but as a as a contest, there wasn't much in it against Italy. So, I suppose we can debate these things. But I'm certainly not convinced that it's the best competition in the world. As for England and Wales, after France lost to Ireland on the opening day, the next big occasion they started talking about was England's home game against Ireland as a potential match that could shape the championship. But, I frankly don't see that. I think Ireland should go there and probably win comfortably. I will say this, though. England do have the habit of, when you sort of write them off, they're capable of putting together a performance. They don't necessarily win, but, their nuisance factor becomes huge.
Yeah, I can see them. I don't think they've got the set piece to trouble Ireland, though. But I can see them becoming that same team like we got in the semi-final of the World Cup, where they just become a difficult team to break down. And they play ugly rugby in terms just to try and to almost stop your strong points rather than win the game, rather not to lose. And I suppose all these people who talk about how wonderful rugby should be and how the game should be played should be looking at their own team there. And wonder if that's the team. Because England have got some fantastic athletes. They've got really some great players. And, what they've served up, even though they've won both their games so far, what they've served up so far has been less than impressive.
Yeah. You would have thought after the bit of momentum, they actually got quite a handy bit of momentum towards the end of the World Cup, that they could build on some of that. And I know they got the two wins up front in this Six Nations. But, they just haven't looked great. And I suppose that goes back to the standard of the competition.
Yeah, well, I think at least we get a break from it now because, while the anthems are wonderful to watch, the rest of it hasn't been that spectacular. I've enjoyed the contest. I enjoy the occasion. Test rugby is always great to watch, just from a spectacle point of view. And, it's nice to see that. I think it was probably a lot more than the hyped-up Super Bowl that took place the same week. There was less focus on people's girlfriends in stands and more focus on the rugby, which is
I think moving swiftly along.
I know, Liam, it's me. I'm the problem. It's me. Anyway, let's move into URC. We've got this big derby round. Of course, the Lions, it feels like round 10, round 9 feels like years ago because it was, I think, almost 2 months ago that it technically was played.
We've had that one game of the Lions and the Bulls and the Lions at Loftus where they were playing catch-up. But yeah, apart from that, we've pretty much been starved. So yeah, it's I think local fans will very much warm to those two games on Saturday. We should probably start off with the one in Durban where the Sharks need to make a statement. The Stormers obviously have their own ambitions. They need to keep up the heat on the Bulls who are leading the conference. But the Sharks will probably be more desperate. It doesn't mean, of course, they will win, but I'm just saying, I mean, their level of desperation should be fairly high.
Yeah, and they should have their Springboks. I mean, I've seen even Etzebeth's obviously out. He's gone for an operation. Obviously concentrating more on the international season. But that seems to be the problem in Durban. It seems to be this, I don't know, just disjointed sort of equilibrium between the Springbok players and their non-Springbok players. And yeah, they look like a force when Eben's playing and Lucanio's playing and you've got all the box in the side, but when they're not, they look very vulnerable. And it almost seems like, I don't know, the mood in the camp or the confidence isn't quite there when certain players aren't there. And it's shown. They haven't done badly. I mean, I know log position they've done terribly. But if you look at their games, they've lost most of the games by 4 or 5 points. And certainly it's frustrating for John Plumtree, but I think we've had Marco Mazzotti on the show. I think they will need to make a statement. And a local derby against the Stormers is probably the place to do it because that's the one game. If you think 2 years ago, the one game against the Stormers where the Stormers drew that game, a year ago, that almost set the Stormers on their way to
there was the draw in Durban.
Yes, that's the one I'm talking about. It set the Stormers almost on their way to the title after that because they suddenly found their sort of, I don't know, their confidence, etc. Where the Sharks just keep on disappointing, and it's going to be an interesting game. I think they should be favourites, seeing as the Stormers don't have their Springboks available. But the Stormers are pretty good without their Springboks as well.
I was about to make the point. I mean, they've had that away match in Paris where they beat Stade Français, and I know it was a match of fits and starts. They still, when it really mattered, when they needed to dig deep, they played really well, and they put a team that usually performs quite well at home under real pressure. And I think they came out of that game with the spring in their step. I thought they were fantastic in getting that win and the way they got it. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that they'll lose on Saturday. I suppose if you look at the team sheets, you might be inclined to think the Sharks. But then you think of the journey the Sharks probably still have to undertake to become a proper unit, whereas the Stormers, and we spoke about, or you spoke about, sort of peripheral players not doing the job at the Sharks, whereas at the Stormers, you get the sense that, they function more as a unit, more as a team, more as a collective.
Yeah, and I mean, Liam, you and I have both covered many teams over the years that have been champion teams, and there always is, I mean, there's always the superstars, the Galacticos, as they love to call them, the Springbok players that come through and score the most amazing tries and obviously turn a game. But all those sides have been built on 5 or 6 really crucial non-Springbok fringe players who go do the job that nobody's looking, that put in the hard work, that sort of make that turnover when it's needed. And those teams rely on those. And it just seems maybe that's where the Sharks, their players have been letting them down, and that those almost, those crucial sort of squad men, as I don't know what else to call them, just aren't functioning or just not performing, and that's become quite a problem.
It's difficult to put your finger on it, but I mean, I suppose it's still early-ish in the reign of John Plumtree, so you know he still needs to bed down his systems properly, and one probably has to give them you know a bit of time to
But
a bit of time for that to settle.
you do get the sense though that once it clicks for them, they're going to be a very difficult side to beat, and because they've got talent there in Durban, and it just seems something's missing. And I mean, we've spoken about it before, but you get the feeling that once it clicks, that they're going to be pretty good. So it's just a matter of when, not if.
Speaking of clicks, the Lions clicked in parts in their last game in Pretoria when they ran the balls desperately close and failed to get the win in the end. But this week, it looks like they're kind of rubbing their hands at the opportunity of getting the right result this time. They spoke in the week about the set piece and those occasions when they have the balls under pressure to make it count. They felt that they didn't do that the last time. They had some pressure, but they didn't follow through on it. So it's going to be an intriguing one in that you know, both sides probably came out of that game with a bit of homework to.
Yeah, I think the one big difference though is going to be the fact that two World Cup winners will be back for the Bulls. Kurti Aronson, Kanan Moody, I think that's going to make a difference for the Bulls. They make a difference to any team they play in. And I think the big question is going to be which team has learned enough from that Loftus game. Yeah, the Lions have this ability to almost make the Bulls look bad. And they have in the last couple of encounters, the last couple of years, they've sort of take them away from their comfort zone. And I mean they I don't know, they cut open the defense quite, you know, and Sanele Nahamba looks like a superstar. Just it's almost as if the Bulls know what they should be expecting, but for some reason don't react. And I think there's been a lot of talk on that as well. Jake also said to us as well that they needed to take a step back, look at themselves again, look at where they're doing well, where they need to improve. And they feel that this is a game that they're going to do a lot better in. Of course, this pre-game talk, you're always going to do better in a game before you play it. And it's going to be interesting to see what those challenges come up. But it's certainly an intriguing battle because, to be very honest, the Lions threw that game away. They had that game in the bag. Or the Bulls, I suppose Bulls fans can say they also at 1.9 points up. But the Lions could have taken those points, and there was would have been very valuable points for them in their journey this season. But they're still 10th now, where they could have been fourth if they had won that game.
Yeah, it was a remarkable, could have been a remarkable swing where the other team's not in action. So, yeah, it's a real opportunity first. And I suppose that's why they feel this is an opportunity for them at home to atone for that. And of course, the man that was central to that performance at Loftus and also in their previous game at Loftus, Sanele Nahamba, he spoke to us. And it's probably the best time now to listen to what he has got to say.
Yeah, I must admit, I think the listeners will enjoy this. Sanele is quite candid, and his personality does shine through. Liam caught up with him, so have a listen.
This episode of To The Last Drop is sponsored by the Listen Audio app, where you can stream all your favorite radio stations, catch up on the latest news and entertainment, and dive into captivating podcasts all in one app.
Download Listen. That's LISTN. From the App Store or Google Play. Download Listen. That's LISTN from the App Store or Google Play. The Listen audio app, everywhere you are.
Sanele, it's been a very interesting season for you. When I say interesting, you obviously started in a position that, you know, that you were familiar with, and then things changed. But in many ways, also your season has taken off. How have you experienced, how have you found it?
I think no, it's been great playing both positions. It's not something I mind. I think given my background at school level, at SA schools and stuff like that, even at the Sharks, played a couple of games at 10 for Curry Cup and Super Rugby. I think that background sort of helped in terms of just adjusting back to 10. You know, I didn't have to almost learn a whole new role. So I think that sort of helped. But yeah, I'm just trying to serve the team the best way I can. Whether I'm needed at 9 or 10, I'm happy to play either or.
Have you been surprised by how quickly things have developed? Because you were barely in that jersey and things started happening.
Yeah, it caught me by surprise a little bit. Okay, it was like one game in two, and it was like, I don't know, I don't want to call it like experimental sort of thing. They just chucked me a 10 for a game, and then the next game, and then the next game, then the next game, and then sort of like that's where I'm playing currently at the moment. It did spring me by surprise, playing so many games consecutively at 10. But yeah, it sort of came as a surprise. I thought it was going to be a once-off thing for that game, but yeah, I totally enjoyed it. Don't like shying away from a challenge, and that's the challenge that's been thrown at me this season, and I'm happy to take that role and try execute the best way possible.
And obviously you bring certain characteristics to the position. I mean, how much did you have to sort of tweak to fit that mold, or were you given the license? You can go and express yourself in this new jersey.
No, 100%. The coaches gave me a whole lot of license to play what I see. I think that's the biggest message that I got. Instead of trying to stay in structure a lot, is to play what I see. And obviously, you've got people around me that also helps. You know, having a coach like Mone Steyn, who's done that jersey for years and did exceptionally well playing at 10. So it helps having him in my corner as well, just to give me a bit of insight or triggers of what to look for in terms of space, you know. But I think the main thing is to express myself and play what I see. And sometimes the guys around me almost like just react a little bit late to say, oh, what is he doing now? But I think the coaches give me the freedom to express myself.
Given the audacious way in which you have sort of taken on this role. I mean, a lot, if you look, especially at the Lions attack, I mean, you do things and then sometimes, you know, you kind of like the lone guy out there. Given that, how has that transition been for you? Because obviously the other guys around you need to be on the same page. So is it you discovered in the moment, or how does that happen?
That's a bit of both. Obviously we're training, me and Krapi Mone, we trained a lot together at 9 and 10. And obviously Marius, we come a long way back from the Sharks days. So I think he sort of understands how I play, and if I see something, I'm actually going to go for it, I think. And those are the guys that are always inside me, outside me. I think that combination between the three of us, I think, and that's what helps us a lot. So Marius, I played with him at the Sharks. I think he sort of understands my instincts. And with Mone, with a lot of training at sessions, we've had I don't know how many training sessions together at 9 and 10, I think. With that, it helps develop some sort of relationship between a 9 and a 10 in terms of the game. I think the training sessions helped me and Krapi, and obviously Marius being mostly outside of me. We've played together at the Sharks, and he knows how I play and knows how instinctive I am, so I think that helps.
What do you think suits your character more or better, scrum off or fly off?
I'll say I'm a scrum off playing flower.
Okay, so it's not doesn't feel like an out of body experience.
No, not at all. It's not too different. That's what I feel. It's just that at 9 you're very close to the ruck and in and amongst the action, and at 10 you're just steering the ship around and, you know, directing play. I think that's the major, not so major difference for me.
Yeah, and being obviously at scrum off, you're a little bit closer to the action, and you've got more license to say things and maybe dispense advice. Do you miss that at all?
I still do the same thing. I think that for me, how I view it is, at scrum off, you get the message from the 10, 12, and actually get the boys to do it. But at 10, you actually give out those instructions or try to steer that ship the way we want to play. So I don't think I miss it, because I still do the same thing. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I haven't changed.
If Flav is also one of those positions where, depending on the team players, there could be a lot of heavy traffic coming your way.
Yeah.
You're not probably built like Andre Pollard or Carlos.
Close.
Is that a part of your role that or playing in that position that you are aware of, that you sort of constantly still sort of remind yourself, okay, there's this element of this game that I need to sort of uphold. Is that something that plays on you, or is it something that you just put in the back of your mind? You just do what you need to do, finish and climb.
Yeah, 100%. I just do what I need to do without shying away from it. You know, rugby is a physical game. At some stage, you're not going to have the ball and attack. At some stage, the other team is going to have the ball and attack. And most teams do target the channel. And obviously, working with the coaches, Coach Sharkey, our defense coach, putting my body on the line, making tackles. I don't think it's something new. It's something I've been doing before, doing it less, but I'm just doing it more now. You can't shy away from the fact that someone will run at you, whether you're at 9 or at 10. It's part of the game that's there. So I'm willing to put my body on the line and make tackles, and then when I have the ball, do my thing as well.
How does it feel in this new position to be sort of part of a national debate when it comes to potentially playing for the national team? We're in a new cycle now. A World Cup has been won. There's some renewal that needs to happen within the squad. How does it feel to have your name sort of, bandied about as a potential candidate to play in the green and gold?
Nah, that's news to me. I think I speak for every South African rugby player. You do want to play in that green and gold jersey one day, and that's a dream of mine, and that's what I'm trying to achieve. I'm not looking too much into that. My priority is to play well for the Lions and put good in performances that will help the team win. I think if I do that, regardless if I'm at 9 or 10, I think if I do that and help the team win, I think I give myself a good chance to maybe get into the Springbok mix and stuff like that. But I think my main focus is to play well for the Lions and put in performances for the Lions to help me achieve the goal that I'm trying to achieve.
The Lions, obviously, if you compare their results this season to last season, there's definitely an upward curve, and it just looks like the team plays with a lot more cohesion. It looks like the guys are gelling a lot better. What do you attribute that to? Is it just time that you've spent together over the last 2 years or 2.5 years?
Yeah, I think time goes is probably one thing. I think more or less it's still the same team we had last year. And we sort of understand each other a whole lot better. There's guys who came from different unions to the Lions, and maybe there was some sort of cohesion or understanding that we didn't understand each other that much. I think this season we understand each other a whole lot more better. I think that's what made us tighter, and obviously playing together like two seasons, I think you end up sort of knowing who does what, who's good at what, and how you can play off that person. I think the time is definitely something that helped the team put good in performances.
Mm. If I can throw things forward a bit, if you look at your upcoming game against the Bulls, you had a game at Loftus a couple of weeks ago. Given that performance, do you feel that you let them off the hook a little bit in that one?
I don't know to be honest. I think we put ourselves in a really good position to win the game, but at the same time we did give them opportunities to fight back, and they did. So yeah, we did let them off the hook a little bit, and what an opportunity next week to play against the same team and try and rectify our mistakes and give ourselves more opportunities and limit their opportunities to win the game.
Does that sort of embolden you more to get the positive result this time around?
I think for me it's just me personally, don't know about other guys, but it's just excitement. Just excited to get to wear the Lions jersey again, to against the Bulls again. It's just excitement, really. I don't look too much into the derbies and stuff like that. You know, I just look at it as another rugby game where I have to enjoy and put myself in the best possible position to win the game for the team. And yeah, I think it's just more excitement than anything.
I get the sense that you from just listening to you now as well, and the way you play, that self-expression is important to you. And rugby can become a little bit constraining. There's certain things that you kind of have to do, stay within structure, et cetera, et cetera. So you obviously relish every chance you get when there is an opportunity to take the leash off, as it were.
Yeah, 100%. Structure is everything. Obviously, it's a team sport. We need to be on the same page the whole time. But I live by the saying that opportunities overrule everything. Rather than me staying in structure for the sake of, not the team, but for the sake of being in structure and not taking the opportunity that's presented, I think that's something I try not to do, stay too much in structure. If the opportunity is there, I think I'll take the opportunity. You know, opportunity overrides everything for me.
When you watch Test rugby, which is obviously often very structured, I mean, what emotions do you go through? Is it frustrating? How do you watch a rugby game or a Test match?
Obviously, it's very structured. And there's reasoning behind it because the margins are so small. Like at URC, you might get four chances to score a try, and at Test level, you might get one chance, and you have to execute that chance. And yeah, I don't get frustrated at anything. I think more than anything, when I'm watching the like Test matches, whether it's the box or whatever, I tend to watch as a fan, really, and just enjoy watching rugby. And yeah, I don't look too much into how they play or whatever is happening. I really watch as a spectator, to be honest.
You're with Brendan Nell and Liam Delcom on the To The Last Drop podcast.
So, yeah, that was interesting, and there's a lot of other games as well. It's not just the South African derbies, although we'll all be watching those as much as possible. But there's a full program which kicks off with Scarlets hosting Munster, and given all the turmoil in Welsh rugby, I think I'd probably back Munster on that one. Yeah.
Yes, also seeing that, you know, a newfound status as sort of, you know, champions of the world just about. Yeah, you'll have to go for Munster.
I think the same with the other game. Unfortunately, there's no international players, and that hits Edinburgh a lot more than the trip to Zebre Parma. Yeah, Zebre's got a couple of Italian players out, but not as many as Edinburgh. So they may have a chance there, although I think Edinburgh should have enough quality to pull it through.
I think either way, it will be a good watch, that one. I think it will be a game that certainly Zebre will fancy taking a win in that one. So I think that's probably one of the games to try and watch. If you're not ordinarily going to watch that kind of contest, then I think this weekend, that's one that you should.
No, I agree. Of course, Saturday's other big game, that's at the same time as the Sharks game. Leinster playing Benetton, and this is quite an interesting one. First against second, Benetton have been the surprise team of the season, but like Leinster, they give the bulk of their players to the national team, and they haven't won in Dublin since 2018. Leinster's second team, the Joker of the URC, is normally that's probably the fourth or fifth best team in the tournament. But I don't know. I've got a sense that Benetton might be thinking of a bit of a grab here.
Do you think they have the depth to do that? I mean, if they're missing the bulk of their, the team that, well, the players that, you know, normally play for Italy aren't playing this weekend. So, you know,
I think it's probably maybe a bit too optimistic. I'd still probably favour Leinster, even their second team against teams with the international players, just given the depth and their systems. But I don't know, Benetton are almost like a romantic team.
You kind of root for them.
Being the week of Valentine's, maybe they can do something for somebody out there. I don't know. So Cardiff against Connacht, normally an intriguing game, especially being played in Cardiff, but Cardiff have got quite a few internationals out. Connacht, not so many. They should be able to.
I would have to favour Connacht. They are the visitors in this instance, but I think they are the least disrupted by all the international call-ups. So and Cardiff has been hot and cold, actually mostly cold. So for me, the visitors in this one.
Glasgow against Dragons. Normally, you'd say Glasgow pretty hot favourites there. Dragons are 15th, but Glasgow's also got a couple of internationals out. Still think they have depth to win this one, though.
Yeah, the Dragons just, when you know, even when they are at full strength, I mean, they don't, they don't pack sufficient punch. I mean, we've seen them, whether it's against the African opposition or Irish opposition, they just, there's not enough there. So even if it is largely a second string Glasgow Warriors team, I still fancy Glasgow too.
Yeah, and then there's one game on Sunday, that's Ospreys against Ulster in Swansea. I reckon Stephen Kitsoff is going to have a bit of a field day there. I think Ulster, I don't know, maybe we underestimating the Welsh sides, but with their national players out, they struggled in normal weeks. And with their national players, they've got lots of good young talent coming through, but they're young.
Mm. Yeah, when they've had their best players available, then the Ospreys have actually been a decent side this year, this season. But, you know, without them, you've got to say Ulster should have the quality, especially up front, to get the job done there. I mean, and Stephen Kitsoff is certainly, I mean, isn't he the competition's top-ranked player?
Yeah.
Should be relishing this opportunity.
I'm not quite sure how the top 100 works, but
I don't know how that works or how they, the title it's got.
And I think the other thing is, I mean, it's quite interesting because when I was looking at the fixtures, I went back to round 9. And the big result of round 9 was Ulster, who beat Leinster 22-21 over New Year's. And I mean, that's how long ago round 9 was. So, Ulster have had a pretty disappointing European campaign. They haven't been very good there. But I reckon they still have enough quality there definitely to win in Swansea. So should be a win there. Unfortunately, Welsh, if we have Welsh listeners, we are happy to be proved wrong. If the Welsh teams do well. And, Liam's giving me some funny looks. He thinks I'm going to get some death threats from Welsh supporters. I might have a few interesting pints of brains if I'm ever in Cardiff again and some talk there. But I love Welsh rugby. I just think at the moment they're going through a bit of a dip.
The sooner they get out of it, the better. I mean, we all get a huge buzz when you see Wales in full flight. So, hopefully they can beat their straps again.
Yeah, that's it for us today. That's the pod. I hope you've enjoyed it. Join us again next week. We'll be talking about these derbies, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot to unpack. Liam and I are both in the fortunate position of going down to Durban. We're going to go speak a bit to the Sharks, so we'll have some Sharks content, hopefully for you for next week as well. But otherwise, it's been good, and we'll chat soon. Cheers.
Cheerio.
Thanks for listening. And a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.